Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual podcast on Radio MD, iHeart, or wherever you download it from. Thanks very much for downloading it. Do tell your friends. We are a show, and this is the B, 917B. I guess we've been going more than 18 years, or about 18 years. And this is the show that lets you understand what's going on inside your body so that you can live at the top of your curve for very long. We have someone who's exciting to me because the issue is so important, how to prevent back pain and neck pain and bending your neck and not getting straight, etc. All those things that are now caused by our overuse of computers, as well as our genetics and maybe our lifestyle in general. Dr. Rudolph Tadodio, and his website is much easier to do than his name, but it's T-A-D-D-O-N-I-O. Website is spinaldoctor.com. Couldn't be a better one for someone who works on the spine. He is Director of Scoliosis and Spinal Surgery at New York Medical College, Director of Orthopedics at the Stamford Hospital, and I'll bet that's in Stamford, Connecticut. Is that right?
That's correct. It is.
And he obviously has a, if you'll listen to it, he's helped develop ScolioScore, a groundbreaking genetic test designed to predict the risk of progression of scoliosis. But he really has a wealth of knowledge. Thank you, Dr. Tadodio, for coming on.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a pleasure.
Now, tell us, how common it seems to me when you look at older people, as they get older, it's almost invariable if they survive into their late 70s that they have a bend in their back one way to the side or the other way up front. What is scoliosis and how common is it?
Well, scoliosis is a bend to the side. The bend to the front is called kyphosis. And the older patient develops those problems de novo, in other words, without having a history of it as a child, secondary to osteoporosis or degenerative changes that occur in everybody with advancing age. And for that reason, it's very important to take care of your bony health and your skeletal strength and exercise and take enough calcium and vitamin D in your diet. It is pretty common. A lot of patients have some problems with it and need to have treatment with physical therapy, metabolic treatment, or even in uncommon cases, surgery.
Now, what about leaning to the left or the right? Is that more common, and what are we doing that makes it more common? It seems to me that there are more kids with this leaning because of using cell phones.
Well, scoliosis is really a hereditary disorder. It's a genetic disorder, and there is a genetic family history of scoliosis that produces it in children. The cell phone usage and computer usage is common with everybody, kids also, and that produces bad posture in your neck, produces bad posture lower down in your spine, and adults and kids can be affected by this. There's a condition called text neck, and that's because we're always on our phone and we're leaning forward and our head is looking down, and it causes strain and abnormal postural alignment. This then can affect your lower back, and because you're constantly leaning forward like that, whether you're standing or sitting, it causes postural pain. Now, it doesn't produce scoliosis, and it doesn't produce kyphosis, but it can produce pain that interferes with your lifestyle.
And now, you said it was, I think you said, how many, well, maybe you didn't, so let me clarify it. It's 2 to 3% of kids have kyphoscoliosis or scoliosis.
Yes, about 2 to 3%.
Go ahead.
And the treatment of kids is less than that, because scoliosis is defined as a curve over 7 degrees. The kids that need treatment are kids that have curves over 20 degrees and still have at least a year of growth left. So that takes away quite a number. Instead of 2 to 3 per 100, it may be maybe 0.5 to 1 out of 100.
And now when someone presents with this, when someone complains, do they present with it because of back pain, or they present with it because of trouble breathing or doing exercise? How do they come to you?
Well, the children come when they're referred by a pediatrician, because the pediatricians examine the patient and they see an abnormal waistline asymmetry. They'll see a prominence on one side in the lumbar spine or thoracic spine, which is due to rotation. And so they're referred after they've had a scoliosis screening. Most of the kids don't have back pain. We only start to see back pain in adults, because they start getting wear and tear changes. And then when it comes to the younger age, we examine them, and we can perform, after x-rays and the examination, a SCOLI score, which is a genetic test. It's a saliva test that examines the DNA components in their genetic makeup, and we have identified the loci on the gene, which are common for scoliosis.
And when you notice that, what does that do then? So you've got a more predisposition. Does that help you help the person avoid it? What's the next step?
Well, what it does is helps us with informing the parents whether or not they have a high risk to progress or a low risk to progress. And so it takes the curves that are in the high teens or low 20s and allows us to say there's a high risk for progression. We need to follow this, and we probably need to treat this with a brace in the hope of avoiding surgery. In the low risk cases, we can then say you have a low risk for progression. You probably will never need treatment, and our follow-up is less. It's less often, and therefore less visits to the doctor, less x-rays, less irradiation exposure. So that's what the SCOLI score helps us do.
And now, if they get a brace, what's the chance they will progress? If they, obviously they're at high risk, but how much do you change that risk?
Well, the patients that do the best in brace are kids, again, that have a year of growth left at least, whose curves are 30 degrees or less. So it's the kids in the 20-degree range. The brace is 85 to 87% successful in preventing the curve progression. So it's not 100%.
But 85% is huge.
Yeah, it's a very it's a remarkable number. And this has been corroborated and validated in many studies from many centers. What the SCOLI score does is allows us to predict the high-risk progression and perhaps tell parents that a brace might not work, you know, so they aren't disappointed when we put them in a brace anyway, because I think that's probably a conservative management, probably the best. But if it doesn't work, they aren't as disappointed if you tell them blindly without the genetic test that their curve, we can prevent progression of their curve. So it helps us establish boundaries, lay the scenario, and manage expectations.
And now what about the adult patient? So do adults, in other words, do children who don't need the surgery or don't have more than 20 degrees, do some people progress as adults?
Some people do. And we know that if a curve is 45 to 50 degrees in a few long-term analyses, that those curves can get worse slowly in adulthood. And some of those patients, if they don't have good bony strength and a good skeletal health, can get early degenerative changes, can get back pain. They can get spinal stenosis, which can produce leg pain. And those are the patients who, if they fail conservative non-surgical management, require surgery. These could be patients who have had scoliosis as a child, or they can be some patients who develop scoliosis as adults.
We're talking with Dr. Rudolph Tadonio, Taddonio. His website is a great one, spinaldoctor.com, no punctuation in between, spinaldoctor.com. And he, if you look at his picture, you would know that not only does he enjoy what he does, but he really enjoys teaching other people about it and how to prevent it. He's the director of orthopedics at Stanford Hospital, and he's the director of scoliosis and spinal surgery at New York Medical College. So I take it, Dr. Tadonio, do you also do or care for patients with kyphosis as we get older? And I suppose that's getting to be more prominent as we're using, if you will, the tech devices such as phones and tablets.
Well, I think, although I don't think it's been proven, that poor posture as you get older can produce malalignment and mechanical stresses on the spine that can cause pain. The pain is normally soft tissue pain, muscles, ligamentous. However, as you get older, if you develop weaker bones, osteopenia, or osteoporosis, your posture is very important in causing wedge-shaped deformities of the vertebrae, which are rectangular because of the change in the weight-bearing status, and then pain. So the posture is very, very important. And anything that we do on a regular basis, which is not congruous with good posture, can certainly be detrimental.
Now, we often get back pain, and obviously if you're listening to my questions, you can see I mix up the subjects of kyphoscoliosis caused by tech-heavy use versus the pain, and thinking that that will develop into a more than just a disc or muscle injury, but would develop into something more permanent. What you're telling me, I take it, Dr. Rudolph Tadonio, is that this isn't what happens. They're two really quite distinct entities.
That's correct. However, if we look at the population in general, 80% of the world has back pain. 25% seek medical help. And a lot of back pain, even in adolescents with a straight spine, is postural related. So even though there's no evidence that bad posture directly causes scoliosis or progressive kyphosis in a young patient, in an older patient with osteoporosis, can exacerbate an already existing or early forming kyphosis or scoliosis. So back pain and scoliosis don't go hand in hand, but back pain is much more prevalent in the worldwide population in general, and accounts for billions of dollars in medical bills.
Gotcha. And do people, so Do you are you involved in those operations or those treatments as well? Or should I stay with kyphoscoliosis?
Yes, I am.
Say it again.
So yes, I am involved in the surgical management of kyphoscoliosis in children and adults. And the youngest patient I've operated on was a year of age with a congenital type scoliosis. We now have amazing navigation tools, computer-assisted navigation, that allows us to use the rods in a precise manner. It makes it safer. We had techniques for less blood loss, where 25, 30 years ago, the patients would stay in the hospital 2 weeks. Our adolescent patients are out of the hospital in 2 or 3 days. Adult patients, instead of being in the hospital 2 to 3 weeks, many of them are home in 5 days. So the techniques, the advances in surgical implants, and our navigation tools and aesthetic techniques are so advanced today that we can really make it much more beneficial for our patients.
Now, let's, if you will, I would love to get into a little more on the surgical techniques. Do you, it used to be this was a hazardous surgery with a risk of paralysis. What you're saying is with these new techniques, that's almost gone away.
Well, it's not completely gone. The risk of paralysis, of course, can be related to poor technique, which one would certainly hope doesn't occur. It can be related to very severe curves and perhaps overcorrection. But we monitor our patients with a team that comes in that hooks up electrodes to the brain, to the upper extremities, the low extremities, the anal sphincter and the bladder. And we can monitor changes that occur from the normal readings that we have preoperatively. If we see changes, well, we stop what we're doing, we back off, wait for those to reverse. So that has made the surgery that can result in, unfortunately, paralysis much safer. Plus, our insertion techniques of screws is much that the incidence of screw penetrating a nerve or the spinal cord is much reduced.
We're talking with Dr. Rudolph Tadonio, T-A-D-D-O-N-I-O, scoliosis, negative impact of phones and tables on kids, and the change in kyphoscoliosis surgery, especially scoliosis surgery over the decades. Dr. Tadonio is the best way of saying it is a master in this area. He is director of scoliosis and spinal surgery at New York Medical College and the director of orthopedics at Stanford Hospital in Connecticut. It says on your record you're a clinical professor of both orthopedics and neurosurgery. Did you train in both, or is your training more, as most people I would think, deal with scoliosis surgery training in orthopedics?
Right, our training is mainly in orthopedics, but the majority of neurosurgeons do spine fusions, which is what we do. So there's an overlap in our technical capabilities. Although many of the neurosurgeons don't do scoliosis surgery, I do other spinal operations that involve the neck or the lower back, and not just scoliosis. So there's a crossover, an overlap between what the neurosurgeons and orthopedic surgeons do. In fact, the partners in my group are made up mainly of neurosurgeons, and we help one another. I just don't operate on the brain. So that's the difference between me and neurosurgeons.
We've been talking with Dr. Rudolph Tadonio, T-A-D-D-O-N-I-O, about scoliosis. If you have questions about it, please do email us. I'm going to try and get them to him. They're at, of course, ageprooflife@gmail.com. ageprooflife@gmail.com is where you can email us questions. You can also subscribe to the newsletter that goes with the You, the Owner's Manual radio show on the A version, the top medical news of the week. Dr. Dodonio has a great website. It's called SpinalDoctor.com. I want to thank Sonar for great engineering. We haven't had Sonar as an engineer in a while. Ben and Darian have been carrying the load, but we've got Sonar today. This is podcast number 917B. Thank you for listening to us, downloading us. Do tell your friends about us. 51,000 of you can't be wrong. At least I hope you can't. So thank you for downloading us. And Dr. Dodonio, thank you for coming on and being so enlightening and teaching us about kyphoscoliosis. And, of course, teaching me that back pain and scoliosis aren't the same thing and aren't one of the same processes. Thanks a lot. And see you next week. Talk to all of you next week, I hope, on You, the Owner's Manual podcast.